From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, April 15th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493. Or Facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
KUAF Night with the Naturals will be April 24th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. KUAF ticket holders will be seated together and an on-field photo will be taken of our group. A portion of ticket sales will benefit KUAF. KUAF tickets are only available at 927-4063, or you can click the banner at KUAF.com to email an order.
Ahead on Ozarks, Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center will soon be able to expand their efforts to survivors of sexual assault. And a traveling exhibit at the University of Arkansas this week wants college students to engage in conversations about hunger.
First, the state Republican Party is being allowed to intervene in a lawsuit defending ID rules for absentee voters. The decision came yesterday after a ruling by Pulaski County Circuit Judge Tim Fox. The State Board of Election Commissioners created a rule in February allowing absentee voters additional time to show ID if they failed to include a copy. The Elections Commission in Pulaski County has challenged the state board's authority to craft the rule, saying only the legislature can make such a provision. Republican Party Chair Doyle Webb expressed concern the Attorney General's office would not mount a fervent defense because of statements made prior to the lawsuit.
They had issued an opinion essentially saying the state board could not issue rules to protect absentee voters who failed to include an ID. The Attorney General's office was called on to defend the state board, which was counter to what their initial unbinding opinion was.
Chris Burks, Pulaski County Election Commissioner, says the decision to allow GOP inclusion in the defense is not necessarily a comment on the ability of the Attorney General's office to be fair.
The judge explicitly rejected their rationale, and that rationale was that the Attorney General's office can't do its job because it has an opinions department and it also represents state boards. That opinion advanced by the state Republican Party was rejected today. Judge Fox said, well, the AG's office does this hundreds of times in civil cases. They issue opinions in the opinions department, and they have a law that says they have to do that. And there's also a law that says they represent state agencies, boards, and commissions.
With the question of the appearance of impartiality settled, both sides have until Friday to submit briefs. Judge Fox is expected to rule in the case on April 23rd in advance of May's primary elections. His ruling is expected to determine whether the state election board has standing to grant additional time for absentee voters to present ID.
Many crop farmers in the state are beginning to worry that harvest time yields for rice and corn may be affected by recent rainfall amounts as the planting season keeps getting moved back for those crops. Jason Kelly, a wheat and seed grain specialist at the UA Cooperative Extension Service, says rice and corn are usually planted in March or April, though this year a majority of farmers in the state are still waiting for drier conditions.
You know, the concern is that, we got a big rain the last day or so, and that's going to push planting back a little bit more, and that if we plant late enough, that's going to probably cause our yields overall, or our yield potential to drop. And so that's why what the concern is, if we plant too late, our yield potential will be going down.
Kelly also says freezing weather in spring could be detrimental to the harvest of some winter wheat in the state, since those crops reach maturity in what farmers call the heading stage, where grain forms at the end of the wheat plant.
Once we get to heading and flowering, that's really the most sensitive time for freeze. And, temperatures as low as 30 degrees could cause a lot of problems once we got to that stage.
Kelly says most of the wheat crop in central and northern Arkansas should not be affected since it is at an earlier stage of growth. But if freezing weather extends to southern Arkansas, where wheat is more likely to have matured, some of the crop could be in trouble.
Arkansas-based Bank of the Ozarks has reported net income gains in its first quarter report. According to Talk Business Arkansas, the Little Rock-based financial institution saw profits of $25.3 million, an increase of 26% from 1 year ago. Diluted earnings per common share for the quarter were also up at 68 cents, a 21.4% increase from the first quarter 2013 report.
Meanwhile, net profits of Lowell-based J.B. Hunt Transport Services declined in its quarterly earnings report. Net profits for the first quarter were reported at $68.7 million, a decrease of 6.4% from the same quarter last year. Net earnings per share were also reported down at 63 cents per share, a decline of about 8% from the same period in 2013.
The Fort Smith City Board of Directors tonight is set to adopt a set of guidelines aimed at ensuring exemplary service from the city for residents and visitors. Ray Gossick, Fort Smith City Director, says the idea originated from the Board of Directors, and while some of the values on the list may seem like common sense for those working in the service industry, bringing the item back to the Board of Directors serves a practical purpose.
It's to formally adopt it and show that there is support from the city's governing body and the city's administration. And that support will then be communicated to all 900 of the city's employees. And so it's important that we begin this message by showing support from the top levels of the organization.
The list includes philosophies like following through on commitments, showing empathy when listening to residents and visitors to the city, and maintaining frequent and prompt communication. Gossick says the principles and values were all chosen with a common thread in mind.
Basically, by identifying the principles that organizations who provide exceptional service value and adhere to in providing that. So our goal was to identify the core competencies necessary for providing exceptional citizen service.
The Fort Smith Board of Directors meets tonight at the Fort Smith Public Schools Service Center on Jenny Lind Road.
The Arkansas-Missouri Railroad is being recognized for its diverse and sound business interests. According to the City Wire, Railway Age magazine has named the railroad its 2014 Regional Railroad of the Year. The railroad's efforts to upgrade its 140 miles of mainline tracks and clearances and upgrades to its locomotive fleet and shop are reasons for the Arkansas-Missouri receiving the award, as are the variety of transportation services the railroad offers.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals didn't play at Arvest Ballpark last night after the game was postponed because of weather. Instead, the Nats will play a doubleheader this evening against the Midland Rockhounds. First pitch of Game 1 is scheduled for 5:05.
If you're going to be there for both games, dress warmly. Clear tonight, lows from 35 in Northwest Arkansas to 38 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow, highs in the lower to mid-60s. Wind gusts, though, between 20 and 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, lows around 42. This is Ozarks at Large. Community health workers in Arkansas are forming an alliance to better deliver public health services and share best practices. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Community health workers play a critical role in delivering health care to low-income individuals and families in both rural and urban places in Arkansas. Community clinics employ them, as do county public health agencies. But many community health workers volunteer. Late last year, the Arkansas Community Health Worker Association organized a presence on Facebook, A Good Start, and it held a summit. But now, professionals from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences College of Public Health Northwest Arkansas are lending a hand to strengthen the alliance. UAMS recently hosted a planning meeting in Fayetteville. Pearl Anna McElfish is director of research focused on community engagement.
The meeting that was held regarding forming a community health worker alliance is really to help community health workers have a collaborative, collective voice. They are definitely lay people. Much of the discussion is, if you're having a lay individual, what level of training is then needed? Is a 6-week training program enough, or is just on-the-job training enough? And so much of the debate around the role of community health workers is around how much training is appropriate for this lay individual. But equally important is that you maintain that component of the fact that they are lay individuals who are trusted members of that community.
Whether volunteered or paid, community health workers are valued because they may be fluent in Spanish, Laotian, or Marshallese, and they know the community.
And they really understand all the idiosyncrasies, the language of that group. Community health workers' role is also expanding to things like research and community-engaged research, and that's an area where we specifically at Northwest Arkansas, or UAMS Northwest, are interested in.
while UAMS and the Arkansas Department of Health are assisting to formalize the new Arkansas Community Health Workers Association. Pearl Anna McAlfish says the workers are leading the way.
It is in the process of formal organization. So we have a first draft of bylaws, a first draft of the different membership types. And so we're in that formation process of, and that was one of the reasons it was important to have this meeting in Northwest Arkansas, because we wanted to make sure that the community health workers and the agencies using community health workers had the opportunity to be part of this if they wanted to.
The Arkansas Department of Health launched a 3-county pilot program with 9 full-time community health workers who did things like assess potential medical needs, offered referrals, made appointments, managed Medicaid and our kids' financials. In some cases, they even arrange for transportation or child care. And, of course, they do follow-up. The ADH pilot program yielded many good outcomes and then some. For example, a suicidal youth received intervention and was able to stay in school. A strapped mom secured resources to return to college. And a young, low-income dad dealing with identity theft received both health care and financial help. The Washington County Public Health Unit has been using this holistic approach in serving the region's low-income residents, including Hispanic and Marshallese populations. And Administrator Robin Thomas says staff find community health liaisons invaluable.
We have outreach workers in our outreach clinic in Springdale who target the Marshallese population in that area. And so their role is to go out into the community and help raise awareness on public health issues such as immunizations and TB screening and maternity care and family planning and some of the other services that we offer in the clinic. So a lot of what they do for us is if there is a patient that we're having trouble locating, they, because of their connections in the community, they're able to find out where the families live and approach them and offer to assist them with getting into the clinic and getting services that they need.
The Tri-County Rural Health Network in Helena, comprised of 68 community health workers, is the state's first regional community health worker agency. Naomi Cottoms serves as executive director.
We currently serve 16 counties in the Arkansas Delta region. We help people access health resources.
Naomi Cottoms' agency's partnered with UAMS, and they surveyed the state to get a census of community workers and found lots of gaps.
And we believe that based on the definition that has been established by the National Labor Department and by the steering committee that's trying to create the Association for Community Health Workers in Arkansas, we believe that there are people who just have not been classified because they don't understand that the work that they do is that of a community health worker.
Cottoms and her team at Tri-County Rural Health are serving a key role in networking community health workers into the state alliance.
I am extremely excited because I'm looking forward to the value that it will bring to the work that the community health workers actually do or provide. I am extremely excited because it will hopefully open up job opportunities for more community health workers. And I am extremely excited because I do believe that once people understand the impact that community health workers make on the lives of others.
And UAMS's Pearl Anna McAlfish says community health workers will play a critical role in the affordable health care marketplace.
Helping them become at patients get to a level where it's a wellness and maintenance as opposed to just sick care. And I truly believe that community health workers are going to be a pivotal part of having better health care at lower cost with an increased population that has access to health care.
A second summit of Arkansas community health workers is planned May 13th and 14th in Little Rock at the 4-H Center in Ferndale. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit the Arkansas Community Health Worker Association on Facebook.
Later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, if you want college students to consider causes and solutions to very big problems, world hunger and local food insecurity, you might have to use unconventional means to get their attention.
And they are like life-size little wheels. Do you remember the big wheels that you used to chase around?
Sure.
Yes, they're like wheels like that, but they're tractors. So they're a lot of fun.
Forgive me. How does this relate then to getting the message, or is this just a way you attract
people? It's the way you attract people over so that they can have the larger conversation about hunger.
We talked to the director of operations for Hunger U, a traveling exhibit that's been parked on the University of Arkansas campus this week. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson, and Easter is this weekend, which means it's lamb season.
What I love to do with a leg of lamb that's been butterflied is to marinate it with fresh mint and garlic and red wine, then take it out of the marinade and throw it on the hot grill.
Our resident chef Kathy Gunst has all the best recipes next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
NPR's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on KUAF.
Since 1982, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center has offered free, comprehensive support to survivors of sexual assault. One of the services this nonprofit organization provides is clinical forensic exams performed by a sexual assault nurse examiner within 72 hours of an assault. The agency has offered these exams at its Fayetteville location, but soon, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center will also have a presence in Benton County. Executive Director Ann Shelley says the new clinic at the Center for Nonprofits at St. Mary's will open later this month, which she feels is poignant, given that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
So if you had come here for a rape exam, you would be met in the lobby. And the advocate would bring you up to our discreet clinic location here. And once this door is shut, you would not leave until the exam is done.
Depending on the situation, that can take anywhere from 2 to 6 hours, though Ann notes 6 hours really is on the long side. The exam area is a small room with pale green walls. White sticky notes dot the walls, denoting where items will be placed. Once it's completed, the room will include an exam table, a desk, and some kitchen cabinets, and says will contain supplies and help the room feel more warm. Artwork will be added to the walls, and Anne is talking to a sexual assault survivor with a background in graphic design about decorating a shade that will be drawn over the room's sole window. The room is equipped with a sink as well as an adjoining bathroom that contains a toilet and a shower. Anne says oftentimes the first thing victims want to do is bathe following an exam.
And that's, I think, one of the hardest things for folks who are just recently victimized. We really, to preserve the evidence to the best possible ability, would mean that you don't shower, you don't drink, you don't go to the bathroom, all of these things that you're asking someone, and that's the very first thing they want to do. So one of the things that we're grateful here, and this being an old hospital, is that our exam room comes with an adjoining bathroom that has a shower in it. That is private, and that our client, once they have had the exam, has an opportunity to go and do whatever they need to get rid of that.
The Crisis Center serves residents from Benton, Washington, and Madison counties. Clients are often referred to the center by police, emergency room personnel, or even other nonprofits like the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter. Melanie Palmer is the shelter's executive director.
We serve a lot of clients who are rape victims as well as victims of domestic violence, and a lot of times they don't want to drive down to Washington County to receive services. Sometimes they'll even tell us things like, I would receive those services if they were here, but I don't want to drive all the way down to Washington County. They're in trauma. It's not a great situation. And so it's really critical to have those services up here so that they're accessible to people in Benton County and so that we can get victims the help that they need when they need it.
The clinic also includes a waiting area located across the hall from the exam room. This space includes a table and chairs, a sofa, a television, and a coffee maker, as well as decorative curtains and various artwork on the walls to make the room feel more welcoming. When a client comes to the clinic for an exam, they will be met by an advocate and a sexual assault nurse examiner. The nurse is equipped with a sexual assault evidence collection kit from the state of Arkansas. The kit provides paperwork where the nurse can report the patient's medical history as well as information on the sexual assault. The kit also instructs nurses to look for signs of injury, and it contains envelopes where different types of DNA samples can be stored.
A rape kit does not prove whether one was raped or not. It truly is just a collection of evidence that police and prosecutors can use to determine if that is congruent with an assault. It is just part of the evidence. And rape kits don't get processed in one day or 30 minutes like they do on television. We send these to the Arkansas Crime Lab, and then the police, we actually turn these over to the police, who send them to the crime lab, and then they are processed as needed by the police or law enforcement.
Executive Director Ann Shelley says the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center sees about 1,000 new clients each year who use the agency's services, which range from support groups to counseling to advocacy. The organization typically conducts 75 to 80 forensic exams annually, but Ann estimates they will conduct 86 to 90 by the end of this year. She says these survivors are unique because to receive an exam, it means the victims have gone to the ER or the local police within a 72-hour window, because that's the amount of time the Arkansas Attorney General allows for collecting DNA evidence. And they've been brave enough to show up and go through an exam. Ann says legal action is a very tricky thing because 60% of cases are never reported. Citing numbers from the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the National Center for Policy Analysis, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network reports that out of every 100 rapes, only 40 are reported to police, 10 lead to an arrest, and 8 will be prosecuted. 4 will lead to a felony conviction, and only 3 perpetrators will spend a day in prison. Ann says the prosecutor's office has a large burden because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused perpetrator knew the victim was unable to give consent.
And that's, interestingly enough, very challenging to prove. Now, that has no impact on the effect that the incident had on the victim. And that's why we're there 100% of the time to support them and help them through every step of the way. And part of that is making sure that they feel empowered. We see getting the exam and collecting DNA evidence, that's completely the survivor's prerogative whether he or she wants to do that. We see that as a possible step towards their own personal empowerment. And from the minute they walk through the doors or call us, we are trying to help them in whatever way that might look for that individual to find his or her own way towards empowerment.
To help with the journey to empowerment, the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center offers a number of other free services, including a 24-hour hotline and counseling. Debbie Fredrickson is a counseling intern at the agency who is working on her master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. Prior to moving to the area for a marketing job, Debbie volunteered at the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault in Kansas City. As a survivor herself, Debbie found counseling helpful.
I focused mainly on individual personal counseling. I didn't tell anyone for 28 years what happened to me, and the very first person I told was a therapist. And so I took my journey was really just focused on one-on-one. But as soon as I got to a place where I felt like I had overcome a lot of the struggles and the things that I was dealing with, was when I decided I wanted to get involved with helping others. And that's when I called the agency in Kansas City and started volunteering to tell my story to others.
Debbie is a fan of Frank Warren, and his post Secret project inspired her to seek counseling.
I was just randomly flipping through one of his post Secret books at a bookstore one day, and I saw a secret that was almost, it could have been written by me. And that was the first time that I ever really realized, wow, maybe I'm not the only one who has ever been through this. And so that was a huge moment in my life that, you know, caused me to think, you know what? This isn't something I have to carry with me to my grave, and I can work through this. And so that's, yeah, then when I went to counseling.
Advocacy is another big part of the organization. Amanda Dunn is a medical services victim advocate at the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center. She is one of a handful of advocates who takes turns being on call for victims. If someone calls the hotline in the middle of the night, for example, Amanda may receive a second call asking her to come be an advocate for that person while he or she undergoes an exam.
An advocate is somebody who's on that front line for you. And whether it's in policy, whether it's in, you know, the very just meeting with an individual, it's so important. Here is somebody on the front line for you. Here is somebody who's taking up your cause. And, you know, whether on individual, you know, macro, micro, whatever level, it's so important to not only be heard, but having people, quote unquote, advocate for change for you. You know, I mean, sure, we listen and we offer support in different ways, but we also really want to see things change.
Amanda says although sexual assault is prevalent, she thinks a lot of people feel alone in it. Amanda was sexually assaulted when she was 18. Citing a study published in 2009 in the Journal of American College Health, the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control's website says 19% of the undergraduate women who participated in the study had experienced attempted or completed sexual assault since entering college. Amanda says it's sad and frustrating to consider how many women will be sexually assaulted in college, but because she has gone through it, she has empathy for survivors. Amanda is originally from Wisconsin and says she had nothing like the Northwest Arkansas Rape Crisis Center to help her when she was dealing with her sexual assault. However, she did find support from her parents.
I have such awesome parents, and being able to day, night, whenever, and I know it was difficult on them too, but really having that sounding board, and then eventually getting therapy, and I'm a big writer, and so I wrote a lot, but I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for my parents and their encouragement and just all the help that they've given me.
Another component of the Crisis Center's work is education. In 2011, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention released the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey. According to the report, nearly 1 in 5 women has been raped at some time in her life. 1 in 4 women has been a victim of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in her lifetime. The report also found that about 1 in 7 men has experienced severe physical violence by an intimate partner, and more than 1/4 of male rape victims were first raped when they were 10 years old or younger. The Crisis Center will help educate the local community April 25th with its inaugural Men's March Against Sexual Assault. The event will take place at 6:30 p.m. on the Bentonville Square.
And we have Sergeant Major Lance Nutt from Sheepdog and Sergeant Dominic Swanfield from the Fayetteville Police, who is on our board. And then Papa Rap and DJ Torres, all men coming together to say, you know, the tagline is no more, but it's K-N-O-W, with the N-O kind of highlighted as well, because we want people to know more in the sense of have more awareness about sexual assault and what they can do to prevent it. But we also want people to say no more, as in let's prevent this. Let's awareness plus prevention will lead to a significant change in the number of sexual assault cases we see in Northwest Arkansas.
Both men and women are invited to attend the march on April 25th. More information is available at nwarapecrisis.org. The agency's crisis hotline is also available 24 hours a day at 800-794-4175.
It is Tuesday, April 15th, 2014. You've got till midnight to get those taxes done. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We better talk fast.
Okay.
Because I've really got to do that. Oh, dear. All right. There's a percussion. This is Musical Tuesday.
Musical Tuesday.
And there's a percussion concert with the Percussion Club, the Music Department at UAFS, and Nathan Daugherty at 7:30 tonight at Breedlove Auditorium. And it's free.
It sounds wonderful.
Back Road Anthem is opening the Party on the Patio season at Powerhouse Seafood in Fayetteville.
I love patio season.
Now it's spring.
Now it's spring. Showtime is 7:30 on Thursday, and tickets are $5.
That's a deal.
Oh, yeah. And the UAFS Symphonic Band performs at 7:30 Thursday at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center at the Fort Smith Convention Center, and it's $6.
So all of those combined, $11. You got a week of music.
And a bargain at any price.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, it's KUAF station manager Rick Stockdale with a big thank you to everyone who pledged or made a donation to KUAF during our spring on-air fundraiser. Listener support is the largest and most reliable source of funding for public radio. Thanks again to everyone who helped make our spring on-air fundraiser a success.
Common Core state standards are expected to roll out in schools in 45 states this fall. Arkansas will be one of them, and this spring, the state was one of 18 states to take part in Partnership for Assessment of Readiness for College and Career Field Testing, known as PARC. These computerized tests were administered as field testing, not to test the students' knowledge, but rather to test the process prior to the 2014-2015 school year, with just 10% of the state's students participating. More tests will be conducted in May, but part one of the field testing was conducted in voluntary districts across the state from March 24th to April 11th. As these are computer-based tests, technology and internet access were of concern for the Arkansas Department of Education. Ozarks at Largest Christina Thomas has this report on the technical side of the testing.
Prior to the start of this spring's PARC testing, the Arkansas Department of Education had questions about technology in its schools. Did the districts have the ability to conduct the tests? What were the components of the school's network? And how do they access the internet? Jimmy Blevins is a science and technology assessment specialist with ADE. He says that a collaboration developed between ADE, the Department of Information Systems, or DIS, and the state's educational services cooperatives. They conducted a survey for all school districts that would be conducting the field tests. These site visits were conducted in February and into the 1st of March.
They went out and evaluated for bandwidth, and just that would be one of the big ones that PARC assessment would be concerned with, but they also map their networks, and now they know every component involved in their network. That's what DIS wanted, and also gained some captured some information that would be more specific to doing the online virtual classes.
He says PARC was the catalyst that got them into the state schools, with overall education as the ultimate benefactor to sufficient technology. Nathan Klein is the technology coordinator with Ozarks Unlimited Resource Education Services Co-op, which is located in Harrison and offers support to 15 school districts. Klein conducted survey visits in 9 of his districts that would be administering the PARC testing via the Pearson Testing Company. Here's his take.
To make sure that their networks were ready and that their machines were ready, that they'd thought through, you know, what needed to be prepared and ready in order to take these tests. And the second part of that was to gather some information and update information for Department of Information Systems, DIS, there in Little Rock as well.
Access to internet in Arkansas schools is often a topic of discussion, especially in rural districts, which many of Klein's are. Harrison is his largest district. He says bandwidth isn't really an issue anymore. Many districts use one provider, and many receive more bandwidth than ADE provides.
Jasper, who has a OARC campus, the provider just says it was practically impossible to do. It was going to cost, I don't know, upwards of $750,000 to lay fiber to that school just to get additional bandwidth. Technology person there has been working for 2 straight years with her superintendent, with the providers, calling contacts at ADE, who in turn were calling contacts at the providers, and finally got something going that will be ready for this school year.
Though it is an area of concern, Jimmy Blevins says bandwidth is not that crucial when it comes to PARC testing in Common Core, thanks to a technology known as Proctor caching, which allows the schools to download all of the test content to one machine before the student sits down to take a test.
So think of it as instead of every student device going to the internet to get that test item from a Pearson server, the student device just goes to the local Proctor caching machine. to get its to get the test items. So students, other than a little verification that has to happen to begin testing, but once the student starts being delivered items, that's coming from a local machine. So it greatly decreases the requirement for bandwidth of probably on the scale of tenfold.
Each student will be taking a test on their one device. Types of devices vary by district, from iPads, Chromebooks, desktops, to laptops. Thanks to apps from Pearson, testing on the tablets have gone off mostly without a hitch. But the actual computers have proven to be difficult, says Klein.
Those seem to be the harder machines to use because there's a series of things that have to be checked to make sure that they're updated, Java, latest Internet Explorer versions, or different versions of Chrome, various things like that that have to be in place to make sure that the test runs without a hitch.
Blevin says the stress was really put on the district technology coordinators to make sure devices would be compatible, updating browsers and Java settings and so on, meeting requirements and tutorials that they didn't receive until January, leaving them little time to prepare for the March testing, and making these site visits all the more important. He says, though, that district testing coordinators perhaps benefited the most, as they were primarily used to paper-based tests.
Technology being even associated with the test was going to be completely new to them, so it was going to require the district test coordinator to work very closely with the district technology coordinator to pull the park assessment off or the field test.
As Klein was the one in the districts talking with the testing coordinators, he agrees that they benefited the most from his visits, saying they would have benefited further from a checklist of some sort for how to conduct this new type of testing.
Something as a cue to say, okay, here's the 10 major things we need to be paying attention to, like making sure that there was space in between the students. I mean, I think that's a common thing with most testing, but there was more emphasis put on the technological side of it rather than the testing side, which, that's understandable for what this is. Again, this is a field test. It's not a real test.
There were a few issues with tools built into the tests, such as a highlighting feature and a calculator, things that should and will be taught prior to students' actual testing begins this fall. Blevins, with ADE, stresses that these field tests were meant to test the program, not the students.
We don't want a student to be handed a device just to go test. We want them to be using that device for education throughout the year and on a day-to-day basis. So, and they need to have, practice within the test nav environment on other things than just, the end-of-year assessment or the performance-based assessment. So they need to be seeing that throughout the year so they become accustomed to it.
He says conducting these site visits to districts administering park field tests is the biggest thing ADE has done when it comes to assessing technology in its districts, gaining the ability to see what's available right now in its schools.
So we can help guide, and when I say we, I mean it is a very consorted effort between the Department of Education, the Educational Service Cooperatives, and the Department of Information Systems. So throughout that combined effort, we can assess the district's needs and direct them to purchases if they need that to get their infrastructure up to where it needs to be. And there's some lofty goals as far as bandwidth and all that has to do with, way beyond the assessment portion of just getting bandwidth where it needs to be for day-to-day learning at the school.
There are continued plans to visit schools that did not partake in these field tests. All visits will result in a report for each superintendent in the state for them to understand where their devices, bandwidth, and network stand. Klein will be visiting the remaining six districts in his service area. He says he was pleased with the visits he has already completed.
But overall, I think technologically, most of them were in pretty good shape.
Nathan Klein is the technology coordinator with Ozarks Unlimited Resource Education Services Cooperative. And Jimmy Blevins is the science and technology assessment specialist with the Arkansas Department of Education. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. The Percussion Club and the Music Department are joining forces tomorrow night at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. They'll, in turn, be joined by Nathan Darty, a composer from North Carolina. This percussion-based concert takes place tomorrow night at 7:30 in Breedlove Auditorium that's on the UAFS campus. And just before the concert, there will be a masterclass. If you'd like to know more about either the concert or the class, you can call 788-7558.
We know Rob Delaney can be funny in 140 or fewer characters, but this week you can find out if he can be funny in paragraphs. The stand-up comic was named the funniest person on Twitter by Comedy Central in 2012, and he'll be on the University of Arkansas campus Thursday night as a guest of university programs. He's scheduled to begin at 8 inside the Verizon Ballroom in the Student Union. The event is free to current UA students who pay the student activities fee. Admission for general public and non-fee paying students will be on a first-come, first-served basis.
Also Thursday night, more music back from UAFS. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith Symphonic Band will present an evening of classic symphonic works in a concert which highlights new music composers from the 20th and 21st centuries. The 7:30 p.m. event at the Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center at the Fort Smith Convention Center is part of UAFS's Season of Entertainment 33. Admission to the concert will be by Season 33 season ticket or individual tickets, which are $6. Tickets available online at uafs.edu. You can also call the UAFS box office. That number is 788-7300.
Cast members from Arts Life Theater will showcase their upcoming performance of Hairspray on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. Youth actors and actresses will set out scenes from the play. This event will be held in the Walmart Storytime Room and is open to families and children. Hairspray Jr. is based on the film and hit stage musical of the same name, winner of 8 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, and it has been adapted for young performers as part of the MTI Broadway Junior Collection. Arts Live will present Hairspray Jr. May 1st through 4th, and tickets are available at Arts Live Theater, that's RE.com, or at the box office 30 minutes prior to the show at the Continuing Education Auditorium, which is located at 2 East Center Street in Fayetteville.
Also Saturday at Lake Fayetteville, the annual Walk MS Northwest Arkansas will raise money to help find a cure for multiple sclerosis. This year's goal, raise $50,000 from area partners and participants to help drive research for a cure and support programs serving more than 11,000 Arkansas residents affected by the disease, including more than 3,700 Arkansans diagnosed with MS. If you'd like more information, 501-588-0687. You can register for the walk at Lake Fayetteville online at walkmsarkansas.org, and the MS is capitalized. Walkmsarkansas.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Today, for the second consecutive day, the traveling exhibit called Hunger U will be parked in the middle of the University of Arkansas campus. The mobile unit is a project of the nonprofit Farmers Feeding the World, which is a Farm Journal Foundation. Margie Ellsbrook, a former Northwest Arkansas resident, is the director of operations for the Farm Journal Foundation and for Hunger U. This morning, before she opened up the exhibit for discussion, she came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about efforts to engage college students in conversations about hunger.
Everyone can do something, and one thing that people don't realize is just even the smallest thing can make a huge difference. It feels like an overwhelming issue, and it is a huge issue, but everyone can help. And particularly for young people, what we try to emphasize is that every major, every person, every personality type has something that they can do to help. So if you're an introvert, if you're an extrovert, if you're an engineering major, if you're an English major, if you're somebody who's really interested in food security so much that you become like a hunger studies major,
everyone can do something to help with hunger.
What are some of the things that a student going to this mobile exhibit will see and learn?
Well, you will be able to take a quick quiz where you can figure out a little bit about where your intellectual point is when it comes to hunger. So you can discover that and then start your conversation with our peer-to-peer educators. So we have that. We have a lot of interactive moments. We have some fun games. You can spin the wheel and possibly win a t-shirt. Depending on the campus and where we're located, the things that surround the exhibit might be different. So if we're on the corner of the campus green, then we might not be able to put everything out that we would normally put out. If we are on a sidewalk, then we'll have a little bit more room. So we have these things called pedal tractors that people can race around, and those are always fun. At the University of Arkansas, we have a great location. We're right next to the Student Union, and we have been able to talk to so many different people, and it's been great, but unfortunately we can't put out our pedal tractors because we're so close to the street. So it just depends on where we are and what we're doing.
What are these pedal tractors?
They're huge and they're great. And they are like life size little wheels. Do you remember the big wheels that you used to chase around?
Sure.
Yes, they're like wheels like that, but they're tractors. So they're a lot of fun.
Forgive me, how does this relate then to getting the message, or is this just a way you attract
people? It's the way you attract people over so that they can have the larger conversation about hunger.
Because I imagine if you just put up a sign that said, we want to talk about food insecurity or world hunger, it's easy to pass that by.
It is, because, you know, why stop and have a conversation about this really depressing issue. So if a student's walking by, then coming over to talk makes it much easier if we have the pedal tractors and the fun things happening. But what we have discovered through our exit surveys is that once they come over and start talking to us, they are very interested in the statistics and the learning part, because it is a really intriguing issue and it is something that impacts everyone. And at this point, what we have also discovered is pretty much everyone has been personally impacted by hunger. So once you cross that barrier and get people's attention, then they are very interested in advancing that conversation. And they quickly realize that this is something that has impacted them personally, and it's something that they would like to contribute to solving.
How many campus visits do you make?
We make 32 to 35 per year. So we do 16 to 19 per semester, depending on our scheduling and, you know, how many we can get to.
How did this concept come about? Were you on board yet when it was developed?
So I just started with this foundation in June 2013. And so they had been around for about a year before that. But it's still pretty new. We have been able to make a pretty big impact fairly quickly. And it was an idea about how to make a huge impact with not a lot of time. Because there are great organizations that are working on a lot of campuses in the college hunger space, but they are also having a hard time getting people's attention. And so what we do is we work with those organizations, and as we do get people's attention and raise their awareness, the primary thing that we do is we refer the students who really want to get involved back to those organizations. So before we go into each campus, we are very aware of which organizations are already there and working. We know about the food pantry. We know about who has a One campaign chapter. They're a huge partner of ours. We know about all the different things that are happening in town. We will know about them. Absolutely.
Things like that, yeah.
Yeah. And so we want to make sure that we know about those things. So as people are interested in doing more, we can say, here's your volunteer opportunities, here's the things that you can do, all those different types of things. It's not successful for us if we just raise awareness. We want to make sure that people know what they can do locally so that we can refer people back to those folks.
Do you see the students that come through? I mean, are you there on hand? And what are the reactions? I mean, any surprise?
You get everything. You get everything from there's no such thing as hunger, and then their light goes on and it's a huge conversation. You have some people come through who are from another country and they have very, very moving stories to tell. You have some folks come through who want to have really deep policy discussions about the causes of hunger. It's a really interesting place to spend some time. And it's a pretty great day. I sometimes call it magic.
It's a place where you honestly see students have that spark occur, where they want to take this issue that probably has been in the back of their mind and turn it into absolute action.
Margie Alsbrook is the Director of Operations for the Farm Journal Foundation and Hunger U. The mobile exhibit is still on campus this afternoon near the University Student Union. And tomorrow from 3 until 6, Hunger U will be involved in a meal packaging event at Walton Residence Hall on campus. That event is in conjunction with the Circle of Life Food Pantry on the U of A campus. You can find out more at the Hunger U Facebook page or at agweb.com/HungerU.
On the next Fresh Air, journalist Carlotta Gall, who covered Afghanistan for over a decade for the New York Times. In her new book, The Wrong Enemy, she writes that Pakistan, not Afghanistan, has been the true enemy in the region. We'll also talk about the risks she's taken and journalists she's worked with who have been injured or killed. Join us.
Fresh Air begins this evening at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Pea Ridge.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 28th through the 31st. One winner will receive two sold-out VIP passes, which include admission to the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late-night concerts, and the main stage. The winner will be announced August 18th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration available at KUAF.com.
That's this Friday, so time is running out.
Oh, wow, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Support for KUAF comes from the Walmart AMP, presenting Steve Martin, the Steep Canyon Rangers, and Edie Brickell August 3rd. This concert will highlight Steve Martin's blend of comedy and bluegrass, and the band will introduce new tracks from their recent live album. Tickets and information available at amptickets.com or 443-5600.
You are more of a night owl than I am, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
You don't have to say it so emphatically, but okay. Did you stay up and take a gander at the blood moon?
I did not.
Or I guess this morning.
I did not. Because it was more, I looked and there was something I think that said a good time to look was like at 4 a.m. And I knew I wasn't going to stay up till 4 a.m. And just getting up at 4 a.m. is different from staying up till 4 a.m.
It is. One just sounds far better than the other.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
So I did not. But I anticipated lots of people would have good pictures. And
and I have looked on social media and there they are. I went out to cover some flowers mm-hmm. with sheets at, I don't know, 11:30, and thought, well, you know, as long as we're out here covering the azaleas, why don't I look up? But it wasn't. It was just bright white at that
mm-hmm.
point.
No, it was impressive when it appeared last night as I was driving home. But yeah, no, it was incredibly cold. Another reason I didn't necessarily want to go stand out and look at it. The poor flowers by the train bank here mm-hmm. in Fayetteville. When I drove into work this morning, they were all like bent over. It was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. All the bright colors just. And they look like such sad flowers.
Oh, I wonder if they'll rebound.
I don't know. Maybe. I feel like they're fairly hardy, right?
I guess.
I'm not really a flower person. I just feel like I've seen those, you know, kind of take beatings and storms
sure.
and stuff. And
I mean, what did you get down to last night? About, I know it was 27 when I woke up this morning at around 5:30.
Somewhere in the 20s, I believe.
Yeah. So, well, we've had those kinds of freezes before.
Right. So I'm rooting for the flowers.
Come on
the corner
flowers.
Of Dixon and West.
All right. We're going to end with some music. John Pizzarelli doing Route 66. He'll be playing other songs made famous by Nat King Cole, along with jazz legend Ramsey Lewis at Walton Arts Center on April 25th. You can learn more at waltonartscenter.org. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You and Christina tomorrow at noon.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for listening.
If you ever plan to move to the west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66. It winds from Chicago to L.A. More than 2,000 miles all the way. Get your kicks on Route 66. Now you go through St. Louis, Joplin, Missouri, Oklahoma City, Luxmire, Hyatt, Tennessee, Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Barstow, San Bernardino. Don't you get hip to this timely tip.